I'm Joe Wood, and I believe.
November 23rd, 1953. The Air Defense Command Ground Intercept radar operators at Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, identify an unusual target near the Sioux Locks. A jet from Kinross Air Force Base is scrambled to investigate. Its pilot, Lieutenant Felix Moncla. Second Lieutenant Robert Wilson was reading the onboard radar. Wilson has difficulty tracking the object, so ground control directs Moncla to the object's location. Ground control tracks the plane and the object on screen. Both get close, and the blips merge. Assuming Moncla has flown over it, they wait for separation. None comes, and they fear the two aircraft collided. However, one blip continues to move. Radio attempts to reach Moncla prove fruitless, so a search and rescue team is dispatched. Neither the Air Force jet nor its pilots were ever found.
Welcome to Alien Nation, the ongoing series about extraterrestrials and UFOs, which asks the question, are we alone? I'll be talking to celebrities and everyday people who also believe and have their own incredible stories to share. We'll talk about well-documented cases, we'll examine the theories and the counter-theories, but mostly we'll just share our own personal experiences together. So get in touch with your own stories. I'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show.
So I'm here with Bruce and Daniela Fenton, and we're at the Awakening UFO Conference in Manchester. So lovely to see you. I'm really thrilled because it's been ages, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's actually months and months ago that we first saw. Probably, I don't know if it was a year ago, it might have been, but.
Might have been longer, actually. Yeah. You were living in Spain at the time.
Yes, we were in Spain.
Yeah. A year ago.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to finally meet you. And I love your book, and I think it's really, really interesting. And I love the bit about the spaceship and crashing on the Earth. And I thought, do you know, I have weird things, have feelings that I always feel a bit claustrophobic and things like that. And I thought, maybe I was there. Mm-hmm. You know, I just feel like something happened in a not past life that maybe made me feel like that. Yeah.
It's quite possible because we've actually sort of spoke to a couple of different people that feel that they have memories from that event. And from what I understand, obviously we mentioned in the book, there's about 30 or so people in Australia that had some kind of past life memories of that event.
Yeah.
So there's probably, you know, a lot more out there that just haven't, you know, haven't connected.
That you don't realise, and then I suppose, you know, knowledge is power, as they say, and once you know these things, you can think, oh gosh, maybe I have something. It's a feeling that you get that you think that something might have happened.
And the thing is that synchronicity plays a big part because they seem to find each other.
Yes.
And the connections are made between them, even if they don't know each other or of the story.
Yes.
So it's quite probable that the people that were involved in that incident will come together at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the ladies involved, she said she would meet people just so randomly, like someone in a car park, come up to her saying, I feel like I need to tell you this stuff. And we'll start telling about these experiences connected with this alien story and this ship and, you know, and just in a car park at a supermarket, you know, so that kind of strangeness element of suddenly feeling a connection, needing to share that information, you know, seems to be part of it.
It's funny, in life you meet people that you have an instant connection with, and then other people you just don't, you know, and it's weird how that happens. I always think, I must know this person from another life. Mm-hmm. I always get that feeling.
Well, we had that when we met. I think that was something Daniela really found a bit freaky, didn't you, when you met me, you're looking in my eyes and sort of find this sort of strange familiarity. So it was almost intimidating you.
Very much so.
Yeah, I'm sure that happened.
I really struggled.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I couldn't look at his eyes for very long. And it's the only time it's ever happened to me.
Isn't that mad? Now, you had some great experiences with going into other bodies, and I thought the Mayan thing was great.
It was great, but it was exhausting, because it went on for a very, very long time, like over a year and a half.
Really?
And it was very random. I would just go to sleep, and sometimes even up to 4 hours later, it would begin. Like, I was in deep sleep, and Bruce, you know, he was there, and he said that I would just start mumbling or just sort of kicking the wall, basically, because from my end of it, it would be like I was being pulled apart cell by cell and being transported through the wall of the bedroom into the other location.
Yeah.
Back in the 7th century in the city of Palenque. And I would have this whole other life there. The really creepy thing about it was that often I would have something that would happen to me there and I would bring it back with me when I would wake up. So there was one time specifically that I remember that was quite harrowing where I had bruises.
Really?
Yeah, so I'd been in an altercation on the other side. I'd been caught in a place on the other side that I wasn't supposed to be in. And when I came back, I had two massive bruises and I'd been hit in the face, basically. And my daughter walked in the morning and looked at Bruce saying, "What have you done to my mother?" I was like, "What are you talking about?"
No one else is there. So yeah, for a normal person, they're going to think, well, you had a fight or something?
Yeah.
So you go back in time to the 7th century.
And relive this whole other life and the problems with it and the issues. And then come back into this one and sort of like, well, what happens if you get stuck there? What happens if you don't come back? That was my biggest concern.
Yeah. Well, what's it like there?
Yeah, it's full on. I mean, it's like there is really no such thing as a law. Yeah, in some aspects, it's very, I guess, very basic. Like, if something happens, you can take the law into your own hands. It seems to be that there are different types of beings living in that location. Some are above ground, some are underground. Some are working with the Mayans, and there is a whole group of Mayans, well, hybrids I would call them, that are over 7 foot tall, and they look very different. Their physical strength is different, the way that their frequency, their voices, everything is different about them. And there is labs underground where other things are going on. So it's a very strange place to be, because seeing what's going on above ground and then below ground is quite unique, but I guess.
Mention a bit about what was in the labs, because that's quite fascinating as well.
It's fascinating, but it's quite scary. Basically, they would take people and babies and harvest the skin.
Harvest
the skin to be able to sort of like blend in and wear the skin to try to make themselves not stand out as much.
Like growing an artificial skin that they could somehow wear, which is really creepy.
How fascinating.
So, I mean, that's why I mean, it's something that, yes, I talk about when I'm asked about it, but it's something I'd rather not remember at times, because it was very full on. And just seeing the things that I saw.
Well, you know, all the pyramids, they have found so many underground things to them anyway, yes. And they're just discovering more and more and more.
Yeah.
So that's not a surprise to me.
Yeah. One of the confirmations about her experiences as well is that you can look in one of the temples at Palenque, for example, the Temple of the Foliated Cross. They've got images there of these Mayan lords, and if you look at them, you find that they're portrayed as extremely tall, with these other normal Mayans standing on boxes to talk to them, and they're still a head and shoulders shorter than these guys. And Daniela would see these giant hybrids in these experiences, and they were like 7 foot tall, with these other ones that were 5 foot. So it's funny, you actually see that in the artwork in the temples. So, I mean, it'd be easy for someone to say, oh, you know, you're just dreaming this. But then you go to these places and you see they've drawn that.
Yeah,
they've actually drawn that, yeah.
I wonder where that sort of came from, all that. You must have been born with this ability to be able to do that.
I guess so. I mean,
did you have it?
As a child, I used to experience beings in the bedroom. And I used to fly out of my cot and fly through the house. Like what I experience is flying and like above the ground and then going up the wall and coming back to the cot.
See, I've had experiences in dreams where I can breathe out and it pushes me up and up and up and up and up and I can get to the ceiling. And Robbie Williams had the same as well. Yeah, he had the same experience. And I had never talked to anybody about that experience before, so it was fascinating. So as a child you did that?
I was doing that as a child. I mean, I remember being in the cot, stepping up to the top part of the cot, just jumping off and sort of flying around.
Oh, how nice.
I do remember beings visiting me, especially one that I would call like Chewbacca type character, or Monkey Man or something, being like sort of like bouncing off the walls really quickly and me being afraid of it if it came near me. So this started when I was very young.
I love what you said about, it made me think about, you know, extraterrestrials aren't going to turn up on the Whitehall lawn, you know, and you said about smell, you know, that, and I thought, yeah, I suppose we don't even think about a different kind of smell where instead of, I mean, it just makes sense they'd be so far beyond our capabilities of what we even imagine that they could come to Earth and be like. So when you said about smell,
And it's funny, you know, because we talked about how contact, you know, could have smells to it, like in the way some animals communicate. But the funny thing is there's a researcher called John Keel, who's quite well known in ufology, and he does say that in many of the contact cases, there's a strange smell of like sulfur or ammonia, and that, you know, there's the brimstone smells that, you know, read about in demonology. He said in a lot of the UFO events, the people report having this gas smell. So they're almost actually ears, yeah, like a smell.
Come on, guys,
contact.
Yeah,
we should be in here somewhere, you think. Yeah, but it's strange. So even though we weren't thinking of that, but since then I've read about his work saying that, yeah, literally there is sometimes a smell that comes with contact. So it's very weird, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we have this sense of smell, and I mean, I've gone into rooms and thought, you didn't even think about it.
You might write it off, but then it might actually be there is something strange happening. Yeah. I mean, you're smelling something to do with that. Because we don't think of that, do you? Same as strange noises. You know, that there's towns where they have ongoing hums and booms and these strange sounds. And again, you know, is that to do with something other dimensional or, you know, some contact? Because they can't find the sources. And sometimes they go on for weeks. You know,
it's... Yeah, the other night in bed, actually, I had this weird humming noise. I got up, went out of bed, and I looked around. I thought, there's something on here, and I couldn't find anything, and then it just went, and I went back to sleep. Do, 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 do. I love that.
So I think I'd like to think, yeah, that the book helps people to rethink that idea that it has to be, yeah, the classical contact,
yeah,
and that, yeah, there are all these other things that we should look out for, just, you know, strange flashes or sounds or smells that, yeah, you know, we don't really know what another dimensional or extraterrestrial would consider to be a way of saying I'm here. You know, it could be anything, you know, anything really strange.
So when you met Daniela, were you into extraterrestrials, other life forms, anything? Yeah. Are you already?
I was. I've been into the sort of ancient mysteries and the paranormal since I was 11.
Oh,
I'm
really?
42 now. So when we connected, well, actually we were both working on a psychic website. She asked for a psychic reading from me, yeah, about her life. So we didn't know each other before that. And I kind of, funnily enough, actually one of the things I told her is I saw her having another child, but not with her current partner. And years later, we ended up together and had a child. But I didn't know
I was... So it was your own child?
Yeah, I was predicting my own child. I didn't realise that at all.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that was kind of how we connected through psychic stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it was
kind of cool.
And have either of you seen any UFOs?
Yeah, we both have. I like Daniela's experience, so I'll let her share one of hers.
Just very quickly. I was coming back from a relative's house and I was about to go underneath the airport tunnel in Sydney.
Yeah.
And I was with my father and traffic had stopped and people were getting out of the cars and I thought, oh, there's been an accident. So got out of the car, looked up. There were three triangular type of craft just hovering above the airport. And in a flash, one went one way, the other one went the other way, and the other one just kept hovering. And my dad's like, I think you better get back into the car. So I got back into the car. Police eventually came and they moved the traffic along because everybody was just looking up at this thing on top of the tower at the airport. We kept driving. We went through the tunnel and we followed the shoreline, which is called Brighton Les Sands. And then I said to my dad, let's just go home. But I noticed that this thing was on top of our car. Just every time we turned, it was just like right on top of us. Till we got to this part where the car started sort of like trying to turn itself off, basically. And I'm like, what's wrong with the car? He's like, whatever you do, just shut the window. Don't look out the window anymore. And I said to him, why? He said to me, these things have been following me since I've been a child.
Really?
And it, no joke, it followed us for about 15 minutes until we lost it because we drove up an avenue that was covered in trees. And so this thing started to come down to where the car was and the car was just like, it was stalling, radio was going weird. And there was this, the freaky thing about it is that when we stopped, we pulled over and we were hidden under the trees. You couldn't hear a bird, you couldn't hear a bat, you couldn't hear anything. There was a slight, sort of slight, very soft humming vacuum noise, and then it just went silent. And you could hear a pin drop. There was no cars, there was nothing, it was dead. And then, because like it was coming down and the trees were blocking it, it shot off, it just disappeared. The 15 minutes it was on top of us, by that point I was like, stop, I want to see it. And I actually rolled down the window and sat on the window where the door is and like pulled my body out to get a closer look. But my dad was like, just get back inside, because I've had these things all my life.
So your dad has had it.
He's had it. He's had it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. He was scared.
It does seem that contact seems to, and psychic experiences seem to run in family lines a lot of the time. I know that there's some scientists over in the US that I think Dr. Kit Green and Gary Nolan who do some research into these areas, and I think that they've kind of found in some cases as well that this happens. Also that there's a strange phenomenon of people getting together who are in families that have contact or have psychic ability, almost like they're drawn together.
Yes.
So it does seem there's maybe a genetic component in these experiences that's getting passed down somehow.
Yeah.
And that maybe these entities or forces can sort of sense that. You know, they know that you're from a particular bloodline or genetic line. Yeah, it's strange.
Yeah, maybe it's like that.
Funny, isn't it, that families often get sort of targeted.
My mum was very psychic, but I don't know if it's in me or not. I just don't know.
Well, it is, if she was. Yeah.
My mum was very, she could tell. When I was living in Los Angeles, she rang me up one day. She said, I had a dream last night, you were having a baby, Josephine. I said, Mum, I think I'm pregnant. And I
was, she picked it up straight away.
Yeah, and she was in England and I was in America, so there was no way that she
probably do have it, but sometimes people have to do development to get those abilities more refined.
Yes.
And for other people, it just happens really naturally, really easily.
Yeah, I do have a little thing where I can think, if I'm driving, I can think, well, I feel like there's going to be, something's going to happen on the motorway, and something does happen on the motorway, just little things like that, or I think of somebody. I was thinking of this ex-boyfriend the other day, and I walked past, half an hour later, I walked past him on the street, on my tail, and oh my God, I was just thinking about you.
There you go, so it does work for you as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and some people, obviously, like, I guess, Daniela, who's had it from childhood, you know, it's more like the tap is turned right on.
Is definitely turned on.
Yeah, I mean, see that sort of mediumship since childhood, and then see the shamanic journeys that we talked about, which are very intense, I've had a lot of strange stuff, but not quite as intense, you know. So for some people, it seems really like it just sort of explodes. Sometimes it's a pain.
Well, you said you got hurt, you know.
I did get hurt, and it was harrowing. I mean, I remember getting things to drink over there to wipe my mind so that when I would come back, I wouldn't remember the information. And Bruce, on a couple of occasions, would have to hold me away from the bed and push the bed away because I was being sick.
Like physically being sick from something that she drank in another reality.
Literally physically being sick. So it was like,
fascinated by that.
And the psychological effects afterwards, for quite a long time, changed your personality, because it's so intense, living two lives, one at night, and another, another time, and then one with your family. It's very intense.
I think you were afraid to go to sleep at night.
Yeah, she was.
I would have been.
I mean, sometimes she was talking in Mayan. I was recording it. I have loads of recordings of her talking in Mayan, a language that she doesn't know at all, and she'd be having a conversation. I'd hear one side of a conversation, so I'd record it. But again, where does that come from? She'd never spoken a word of Mayan in her life. But she's
there. You have a Mayan look about your eyes something like that, isn't it?
It was very full on. I mean, that was very full. Out of all the experiences that we've had, or that I've even heard of, that's one of the most full on. It's a separate life you've got to try and live with somehow.
It was very tiring. So it would happen spontaneously, maybe 3 or 4 times a week. It would go on for hours and hours. It was like, when is it going to stop? It was going on for a year and a half.
Jesus.
And of course, there was extra.
I wonder why it suddenly stopped then.
I had a baby.
Oh, you had a baby?
Yes, had a baby. We had our son and it seemed to stop.
Oh, isn't that fascinating?
And these were those the extraterrestrials involved in that experiences as well, because you'd see these ETs under the ground in the Mayan areas. So we don't know if it was somehow being made to happen by them, you know, because obviously having that alien element to it.
Yes.
We don't know if it was a natural thing as her being a shamanic healer, or if they were doing something to make her see this stuff, you know. Yes. So we may never know, but they were definitely involved, because, you know, she'd see them all the time in this Mayan city. So
So, I mean, this book is lovely. I really recommend it, and I want to get you to sign it.
Okay, for sure.
Tell me about, I want to ask you, Bruce, about your UFO sighting.
Yeah, I've had a couple. I had one back in about 2002, I think it was, and I actually got into... I think I got into the newspaper in Clacton, because this happened when I was in Chelmsford.
Yeah.
And there was about 12 of these glowing orange orbs, and they came from one horizon and like right overhead to the other horizon, and probably within about a minute or so. So, I mean, they must have been traveling very fast. So I reported that one. That got into UFO magazine at the time. And there's another one I had, which I thought was a really strange one, was over my parents' house in Stroud, in Gloucestershire, and that was like a cigar-shaped kind of craft.
Yeah.
And that was, it was absolutely silent. It had just three lights along the middle, and it just literally just cruised over the house. And then I looked again, and it had disappeared. It just like a bang, gone. So I've had a couple like that, and then the ones where you see, you know, lights, flashing lights, strange lights that then disappear. So, or I shouldn't say, one of the most spectacular that I've ever seen actually was back in, I would say, probably mid-1990s.
Yeah.
And I was out in the countryside, again in Gloucestershire, and five of us were driving home from a party, and one of us noticed there was an object in the sky that seemed to be teleporting, like jumping around the sky. So we stopped the car, got out, and this thing would go along in one direction, vanish, appear on the other side of the sky, be going a different direction, vanish.
I've heard about this.
I think, in fact, you know the Bob Lazar story?
Yeah.
In that, when he took, I think he took Leah and some of his friends out to the desert, and they saw something just like that, this object that would jump around.
Yeah.
And apparently it's to do with the way the craft moved, that they pulled the destination to the craft, so it sort of folds space, and then it lets go, and so it snaps back. So it looks to you like they're jumping.
Yeah.
And actually exactly is what, you know, what I saw, seems to be what they saw in the desert. So these things are obviously
seeing
out
these
there.
Like weird characters walking behind me.
Got a Darth Maul or someone going past.
Yeah, yeah. Bob Lazar was talking about that, wasn't he, on his on his interview? So you've seen that as well. I've had a few people tell me about jumping, you know, across the sky like that.
And it makes sense how he describes the drive system, and that would be what it would look like if it's bending space, and then it jumps with the bent space when it snaps back.
So.
It does make some sense. How that drive works, obviously that's beyond me. I'm not a physics professor.
Yes.
But it certainly looks like the way that he explains it, you know.
Yeah. It makes sense.
It does make
it?
Sense, yeah.
Yeah. So your new book, what's your new book about?
The new book is Exogenesis, and that is a deeper dive into the information about how extraterrestrials visited in the ancient past and modified our genetics.
Yeah.
And this story of this craft that visited. And the debris that is left behind in Australia, but also expands.
The debris is left behind in Australia.
That we have, it's what's called today Australite tektite, right, which has been mistaken as debris from an impact. But when you look deeper into this story, what you find is there are NASA papers saying that this was an object in orbit around our planet 780,000 years ago, and that this object was largely made of silica, about 75% silica. Now that's important because cutting-edge scientists are telling us they think extraterrestrials will have huge silica networks where they've uploaded their consciousness so they can live eternally as kind of an advanced artificial intelligence. So then NASA are telling us that 780,000 years ago an object arrived in orbit around our planet. It was about a kilometer across, made almost entirely from silica, and that's at the exact moment that Homo sapiens diverges from its ancestors. Right? So isn't that a strange coincidence? We get a huge silica moon, starts orbiting our planet, and suddenly humans are upgraded. from being, you know, Homo erectus to early Homo sapiens.
I've had many arguments with people about the evolution of man, and I say, you know, if we came from monkeys, then monkeys wouldn't be around anymore, would we? You know?
And also, we're so different to them. The brain is structurally so different. They found out there's dozens of genes that are uniquely in the human line that just seem to suddenly change, right? You know, which we don't see in any other primates.
And then we've got some DNA strain in us that is, they don't know where it's come from as well.
There are some really mysterious elements. There's what's called human accelerated regions. And there's about at least a couple of hundred of these. And these areas of the human genome where the DNA is so radically different to what they'd expect that they call them accelerated, like the evolution has been moved forward really fast. Yeah. Well, how does that happen? So someone's moved it forward.
Well, it's obvious for me anyway. I think for a lot of people these days seem to be more open-minded about it. But for me, I've always thought that we didn't come from monkeys. I just believe that.
There's a lot that makes us separate from primates, and I think that in the next couple of years that's going to become really recognised. I mean, obviously I'd like to think my book does a big part in that, but we'll see. But certainly the science is going that way.
And these days it seems like people are far more open-minded to this now, aren't they? I mean, I was in the cab today and the cab driver said, what are you going up to Manchester for? I said, I'm going to a UFO conference. It's called Awakening. And we started talking about it and he said, I believe there's more to it than what we know. He was all like,
most people, I think in the US they did a survey and they said 35% of people believe in ancient alien contact and about 25% believed in current ongoing contact. So that's millions and millions of people just in the US alone. You know, and I think that's around the world.
I think that's why this whole subject is becoming so popular. 10 years ago we wouldn't have had this here now.
No, and the UK has always been very conservative, hasn't it, compared to the US on these subjects. So it's amazing that we're starting to get events where you can get 1,000 people or more, you know, turn up.
Yeah.
It used to be probably, you'd be lucky to get 20 in a village hall probably for some of the UFOs.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's great. I think we're all opening our minds and thinking outside the box and looking up into the skies and wondering. You know, I think that's so important instead of looking down and keeping a closed mind. I love it that we're thinking, we're all thinking.
Of course, the new revelations from this ATIP program and, you know, TTSA with these videos showing the US military encountering craft, you know, which has been on the big major media platforms. I mean, again, that would have been unthinkable even, say, 5 years ago, wouldn't it? I mean, so the media has
changed. What do you think of storm on Area 51?
Yes, that's kind of a funny one. I'll be very surprised if anyone does it, for start, but it's... It makes people think though, doesn't it? You know, it shows people interest.
Well, it makes the government realise that people want to know and don't want secrets.
Absolutely, yeah. You see there's a kind of an anger about it that they really think, well, why can't we be let in on something this big?
Yeah.
You know, and if you have got these craft, you know, even if they want to keep the technology secret, they could still say, well, look, we've made some kind of contact or we found something.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to share the technology with us.
But as Kathleen Meaden said, because I asked her, why does she think the governments don't tell us? She thinks it's too much for most people to handle. And that's why they hum and ha, tell you a little bit of truth and then that.
It might be the case, but only if there is a particular threat or some sort of, you know, if the military have found out that there's something scary, you know, that there is a threat element, then I could understand their natural reaction would be, right, we keep this secret, we investigate whether it's a danger to people, and if it is, we prepare some kind of defence.
Yeah.
So if that's part of the story, that would explain it maybe, but if it's mostly friendly or neutral, then I don't see why they would need to keep that back, to be honest, because we should be able to know, if that's reality, we should know reality.
Yeah, I think so too, and it would make people, you know, it would stop all that religion stuff where people are confined by religion.
It would unify, I think, it would.
Yeah, and we could work together as a whole world rather than all this split up. Like
that's right, suddenly we're just all indigenous to Earth, one race, one species, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of all this, different countries fighting, you know.
And
I know that was, of course, Reagan's famous speech.
People only have wars over religion, you know.
It's mostly, that and a bit of oil sometimes. But, if you look at, do you remember Reagan's speech when he said that if there was a threat from outside of this planet, how we'd all come together?
Yeah.
which is, I think, it's kind of true, isn't it? It would unify. If there was some force out there, it would unify us. Yeah.
So, Bruce, can we get you back on when you're on Ancient Aliens?
Yes, I'd love to do that. And you can sort of have a bit of a chat about that experience and, and some of the new work.
That's one of my most favourite programmes.
I'm really looking forward to having a chat with you. It's been really cool.
Thank you, Bruce, and thank you,
Thank you so much.
That's our show for today. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please rate us on whatever platform you get your podcast from. It helps people like you find us. Today's show was produced by Mike Hansen for Pod People Productions. Theme music by Mike Hansen and Jamie Allen. Special thanks to Nigel Heath and our narrator, Mike Hansen Sr. If you want to share your stories, we'd love to hear from you. Just email info@podpeopleproductions.co.uk, subject matter, Alien Nation. Beam me up next time. I'm Jo Wood. And